The choices.
Choices, like full on, like choices with a capital C, capital H, capital O, I, C, E, S. Okay?
I can't.
No. No. It's too much.
It's too much.
You're in a green plastic mask. Why are you acting so hard? Why are you nailing this?
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to After Broadway, the podcast where we deep dive into anything and everything musical theater from the comfort of my car. I'm Tara.
I'm Stefania.
And in today's episode, we are starting a new series. We are titling it Way Back When, and we are taking a look at past Tony Awards. So, Steph, what year are we starting with?
We're going to take a look at the best new musical nominees of the year of the Tony Awards of 2009.
What happened in 2009? The year as a whole.
What didn't happen in 2009? Well, I was the ripe old age of 16 years old in 2009. So, yep. You know, very pivotal year for me. I was in high school. I would honestly say this is like when I started really paying attention to award shows. Like really this year was the year.
Yeah, I kind of agree. I was in grade 10. I remember like very vividly that I Got a Feeling by the Black Eyed Peas was the song that
was
year
it?
Because I was on student council and we have this talent show and the student council collectively performed a version of I Got a Feeling that
wow.
year. So
that's
I don't have a video of it. I wish I did.
That's quite something. Yeah, wow. when we were talking about this, I was thinking about the Oscars that year, and that year was the year, the 2009 Oscars had Avatar and The Hurt Locker. Those were the two big movies competing against each other, and I vividly remember that Oscars, and I vividly remember that being my Oscar origin story, if you will, the year I really started to pay attention to the Oscars. I've never even seen those two movies, but I was like very
You've
into,
never seen Avatar? Wait. You've never seen Avatar?
I've never seen Avatar.
Are you waiting for like 2 and 3 to come
yes,
out in 15
I'm waiting
15
for like
years?
5 to come out. I want to binge it.
Great. We've been to Avatar World though, so
we
you've
have
done
been to
that.
Pandora. No, I don't think I'll ever watch Avatar.
Interesting. I saw it in theaters. It's
of course
long.
You did. We actually have it on DVD in my house. But again, I will never watch Avatar.
What won best song at the Oscars that year? Was it I See You from Avatar?
It better not have been. Let's find out.
Leona Lewis, though. That's a throwback.
That was the year of Crazy Heart. So The Weary Kind from Crazy Heart won. And then there was... it was also the year of Nine...
Yes.
And the year of The Princess and the Frog. So we had some music.
Interesting. So not Avatar.
Not Avatar. Leona wasn't even eligible.
That song, though, played. It plays during the Navi River journey at Disney World as instrumental. So if you happen to be there, you can hear that song.
That ride, I wouldn't even recommend waiting in line for. So.
No, me either. But if you happen to have like a random fast pass, do
right.
it. It's air conditioning for like... maximum 1.5 minutes.
Longer if, like us, your boat gets stuck.
Yes,
so.
Then you're there for like a good 3 minutes.
Well, all the other boats pile up behind you and all the boats ahead of you leave. And you're like, wow, I'm going to be in this room forever. Okay.
Yeah.
So that was the year of the Avatar Hurt Locker Oscars. And it was also the year of the first top 10 Best Picture nominees, which I think is interesting because it shows a shift in trying to cater awards shows to popular movies or popular culture, trying to gain a wider audience for viewers. And I don't know if it was quite successful.
And then the other thing that I had said to you yesterday was like, this was the year of the Grammys that me being a huge Jonas Brothers fan and not knowing who Adele was like, who is this Adele that won for Best New Artist? Like, what? Little did I know this many years later, like, I love Adele, right? So
Adele
it's
is
just
great.
Perspective of years.
It's so true. What was album of the year that year? Wait, I'm pulling it up.
I looked it up and I don't know what it is, but I do know that it was also the year
of
Coldplay, Viva La Vida. So
it was. So the winner, another T-Bone Burnett joint. It was the album Raising Sand by Robert Plant and Alison Krauss. So not one that's really stayed in the public consciousness, if you will.
No.
I remember that winning everything that year, actually.
Yeah, I remember that too. But I also think I remember the Coldplay performance because obviously Viva La Vida was such a big song.
It was
and
huge.
It was on the radio like all the time. And yeah, that was it was an interesting year. I agree with you for award shows. And let's get into the 2009 Tony Awards. And really the main reason that we chose this year is because it is one of the craziest, if not the craziest, opening numbers of a Tony Awards ceremony of all time.
And I think about it very often, honestly. I think about pieces of it very often.
I think we all think about it very often. In the last 5 days, I think I've watched it every day because it's just like, it will never be recreated again. And
for good reason, for good reason.
Yeah, so let's quickly just touch on what happens in this opening number. We start with Elton John, who this is a big year for him because Billy Elliot's got 15 Tony nominations. You know, he did the music for it. He starts playing Electricity. Great. Elton John is a huge get for your opening number of the Tony Awards.
Yes.
His mic is off.
Of course.
Great. So we're just going to like try and fix this. They fix it. You know, the Billys come out. They do Electricity with the young Billys and the older Billy. It ends with Billy flying, which is like such a great emotional moment in the actual show. Amazing. Another key point is obviously when Poison comes out to perform for Rock of Ages, which like, again, wow, Bret Michaels on the Tony Awards stage. Who would have ever thought? Well, they probably shouldn't have hired Bret Michaels to be on the Tony Awards stage because he was almost decapitated on stage and then later sued the Tony Awards.
Look, he didn't show up to rehearsal, okay? He didn't. He was taking too many bows. Not to, like, victim blame here, but...
No, but he was playing to the audience.
Yes.
When, like, clearly he should have
needed
not
to
been.
He needed to move. He needed to get to the back of the stage so that the, like, scrim couldn't come down and hit him directly on the head. And again, not to victim blame here, but... Bret Michaels, there's something
happened here. There's a disconnect. There's a disconnect there for sure. But also, like, having Poison perform is really exciting because Rock of Ages, which we'll talk about when we talk about Rock of Ages, that score is incredible.
It's so much fun.
It's so fun. Such a great range of songs. So to have them come out, I think it was Nothing But a Good Time is what they sang. It was like, it's just super fun. And then obviously another pivotal moment is... I believe it's Sutton Foster warming up with Mike Hot backstage.
Recognize that voice anywhere. Is it Guys and Dolls that's out there performing?
It is Guys and Dolls and West
Side
Story.
Versus West Side Story, right.
Doing
They're
a mashup.
They're both singing like Tonight.
Tonight and Luck Be a Lady Tonight. Luck and all you hear is like, I can't even do it. Can you roll
doing,
your
like, vocal
lips?
Trills. Like, no, I can't do it.
I can't do it. It is, yeah, literally vocal trills and then like, like that's what you hear in the background. It's very faint, but if you turn up the volume loud enough, oh, obviously this will be in the description for our YouTube viewers to watch. That's iconic. And also there was mic issues for Karen Olivo and Steph, who was playing Maria, that
Josefina Scaglione.
Yeah, so both of them come out to sing more of Tonight. Their mics not on, just like not on. So that was great. And you're like, okay, so like what's next here? What could possibly be next here? Dolly Parton just comes in to sing 9 to 5. You're like, cool, this is great.
Stumble in a bed for myself, a kind of ambition.
I will say though, Megan Hilty, a great young Dolly Parton.
Yes, she like perfect casting.
Perfect casting. Also, Allison Janney, Stephanie J. Block, like wow, what a blockbuster trio there.
But what about the amazing duo of Stalker Channing and Aaron Tveit singing like I'm Alive and what was she singing? I don't even know.
Bewitched, Bewildered, and something from
Bewitched,
My Pal Joey.
Bothered,
Pal Joey.
And Bewildered. Yes, you're right. Where do those songs go together?
Okay, so if you have listened to any of the Ensemblist Tony Telecast episodes, they have also talked about 2009, and they were trying to find a lyric connection between those two songs, thinking that, like, maybe the word
something.
Was Alive, because, like, why else would Aaron Tveit be there? No, there's nothing. There's literally nothing. And I have to say, like, Aaron Tveit, adorable in 2009, first of all.
Well,
but,
to
like,
think about it, this is a premonition to his Grease Live performance, you know?
Yes, you're 100%.
That's the connection.
Right.
It's an advanced connection to Grease.
But for anybody that's seen Next to Normal, like in this song, he's sort of like doing things around Diana because, like, spoiler, he's a figment of her imagination. And he's like kind of doing it to Stalker Channing, and it doesn't quite make sense.
So weird.
So weird. Also, Aaron wasn't nominated that year, which we'll get into, yet he performed twice. So. you know, it's like a Reed Carney Hadestown situation.
Maybe they were just trying to find the one song in Next to Normal that works out of context, and maybe it's that was one. It.
Yeah, agreed. And then, you know, it continues on. We keep having a bit more performances. Shrek comes out, does their thing, and then we end. Oh, sorry, Liza Minnelli is there too.
Right? Which is... Why? I can't remember.
I think there was like a special Tony Award that year because the remember how like the Tonys used to do when the people are performing on the TV screen next to it, it like shows what the show poster is, and it said like Liza live at something.
Okay, so there was a theatrical event. There was a category called Best Special Theatrical Event, and Liza's at the Palace! Exclamation
yes, that's
point,
what the won, that's what the poster was.
Won that. I don't think we still have that category.
Best no, I don't think event. So either. Unless it's like a non-televised thing.
No, it was awarded from 2001 to its final year, 2009.
You know why? Because like Liza's the only person Liza. You can give that award to.
Can't top Liza.
But then my favorite thing happens, and the cast of Hair comes out, who was nominated for Best Revival that year, to sing Let the Sun Shine In. And Liza is literally doing body rolls on stage, and it's so funny.
That's actually, this opening number is crazy, but that part always gets me emotional because they bring everyone
there's
from
like
all the shows.
There's like 400 out. People on
so
stage.
So many people, and they're all just singing Let the Sun Shine In, and it gets
Shrek
me
cast
every time.
Like...
Yes. For some reason, the Shrek cast was meant to sing Let the Sun Shine In.
100%. That song could have been in that show.
Yeah.
I just love it because it's like, again, I agree with you. I think that that song really like ties it all together. And you're like, was this a good opening number when that happens? Because it's just like a really fun song. But then you look over to the person that's like next to Liza and they're shirtless because it's hair. So it's like, cool. Great.
It's just going wild. It's just going wild. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if they needed this full 15-minute opening sequence, but...
It's so long.
We're blessed to have it.
We are blessed. And also, Neil Patrick Harris hosted that year, and he's not even in that. And
that's
you know,
so true.
You know that if James Corden was hosting, he would have been front and center.
You're right. It's funny because Neil Patrick Harris is known for his... When he's hosting the Tonys, these big opening numbers. Bigger, yes. Or It's Not Just for Gays. I can't remember what the other one was. But, like, he always does these, like, huge, big production numbers. And this is a huge, big production number, but he's nowhere in it.
No, I know. He could have easily come... And it goes all the way... The video that I've seen goes all the way into the claps, which, like, Anne Hathaway is in the front row.
Right.
Like, living her life. Yes. And you would think that that's the time that, like, Neil Patrick Harris would come out to, like, wrap it all up. But no.
No, he doesn't. No. So...
It's so iconic. I really think it's like required viewing for any
really
theater
is.
Fan to watch. Yeah.
It really is. You can reference it at any time. There's always something relevant that can be brought into the conversation. Whether
100%.
It's Bret Michaels being almost beheaded.
Decapitated. Yeah.
You know, the crazy duo of Stockard and Aaron. that Sutton's one, vocal trills.
I really think that like the I'm Alive moment is the most shocking in the whole opening number. Like, why is that there? It literally makes no sense.
It's really weird. It is really weird. I don't know. He was just so cute then. Okay.
Yeah.
But so the focus of the episode today is we're going to talk about the four best musical nominees from that year, which are Rock of Ages, Shrek the Musical, Next to Normal, and Billy Elliot. And kind of using those four musicals to examine what theater was like at the time.
Yeah, this is also a super interesting year because I have seen all four of these, none of them on Broadway, but have seen all four properties. You've seen three now, kind of.
Well, okay. I've seen two in person. One of them was actually the very first Broadway show I ever saw. I'm bringing out a prop. The very first Broadway show I ever saw was Billy Elliot the Musical. I saw it in the fall of 2009. I went on a school trip to New York and they took us to see Billy Elliot. And I also saw Next to Normal, but only here in Toronto. So I've only seen those two and, of course, the filmed version of Shrek, which is on Netflix.
Yes. So we are going to start with the least nominated show of the four, which is Rock of Ages. You've never seen the movie of this either, right?
I've seen bits and pieces of this movie. The most vivid thing in this movie is Tom Cruise. And for some reason, Tom Cruise's performance in the Rock of Ages movie and his performance in Tropic Thunder are like the same in my mind.
That's so funny because, I mean, he dances in both movies, but...
They're just, like, linked, inextricably linked, those two performances.
This performance of Stacey Jacks is like really method acting, I must say.
Sometimes you just gotta respect how hard Tom Cruise will go, you know?
He went hard for this movie. So yeah, Rock of Ages came out in 2009. I saw it here in 2010. It was part of a Mervish season. And my mom and I were discussing the other day that this was the very first time that popcorn was sold in the theater, because this type of a show,
right,
allows that. Like, the audience is kind of rowdy. Yes. Yeah. 100%. You're in, like, you're supposed to be in a bar. And, like, literally one of my biggest regrets is before the pandemic hit, I was in California, and there was a Rock of Ages at the Bourbon Room, like the actual Bourbon Room, that was meant to be like an immersive performance. Apparently you like sit and you drink bourbon and you let the cast just do their thing. And I feel like it would have been so fun. It was just like too late. We couldn't get tickets for it, but that would have been like such an experience, because I do think that this show is like, it craves the audience. You need that huge audience interaction. And as I said at the beginning of the episode, the songs that are in this show are so fun. Whenever Don't Stop Believing plays anywhere, you literally stop what you're doing and everybody sings along.
It's true. Well, every single song in this musical is an anthem. You know, it's like the band's most popular song. Like, you can imagine each of those bands closing their concerts with that song. And they took every single one of those songs and put them into one show. So it's just hit after hit after hit after hit after hit. So the energy is crazy.
Yeah. And so when I saw it here, the guy that was playing Drew, his name is Yvon Pedno. He's French. I don't think he's an actor. I'm pretty sure he's just a singer. He was on the French version of The Voice that filmed in Montreal. And amazing. I had also seen him as Galileo in We Will Rock You. So he was kind of like a Canadian rock staple. Do you remember? I don't know if you've ever watched, but in Toronto, they used to do those like random City TV New Year's Eve productions on TV.
Of course.
Yes. And Rock of Ages performed for like 20 minutes.
20 minutes? Oh my God, that's so long. I don't know if I saw Rock of Ages, but I remember seeing like the American Idiot one. Mm-hmm. I've definitely seen those.
But it was one of those things that like they closed out New Year's Eve with Don't Stop Believing and the crowd went
amazing.
Nuts.
That was at like Dundas Square, right? Would have been at Dundas Square.
This is very a Toronto tangent for anyone listening.
Do you remember when Keith Urban was the musical guest? And John and Netta from Big Brother Canada hosted. And so it was like Keith and Nicole and John and Netta. Like,
wow, that's what iconic duos right there.
This is really Canadian. This is like a really Canadian moment. Anyway, back to Rock of Ages.
Yeah, so I honestly, like, I had such a great time at this show. My parents actually saw it in Vegas. They put on a production of Rock of Ages in Vegas, which I'm sure was amazing. My brother also saw it in Vegas. It's just, it's, again, great music, great atmosphere. And there's been a lot of amazing people that were cast in Rock of Ages in general. I mean, the beginning that I know when I first started like following people in theater is like Jeremy Jordan and Ashley Spencer met doing Rock of Ages, like Drew and Sherry, which is so sweet, so cute. And you can actually spot Jeremy Jordan in the Rock of Ages performance wearing a very bad, like, long black wig. And he's so tiny. He's a swing. And that medley from the Tony Awards is amazing. And I think it's all due to Mr. Constantine Maroulis.
Okay, like, let's talk about Constantine. I saw him perform live once in the wonderful musical Jekyll and Hyde. It was here in Toronto. And I am a big American Idol fan, always watched American Idol, saw him in American Idol, knew he had a great voice. But seeing him in person, I realized this man's voice is, like, unmatched, match. We went nuts for his voice. Was that production of the show good? Definitely not. Was his voice making everything worth it? 100%. And so, like, hearing him, he has, like, a rock voice, getting to sing these great, you know, 80s hair metal rock songs. Like, it perfectly suits him. This is the perfect part for him.
Yeah. Another person that's, like, not an actor, right? He's a singer first. And he'll probably never do theater again. Who knows? Or well, it would be something like this.
He's done a lot of Rock of Ages.
Yeah, he came back.
Did he go back and do the Off-Broadway recently?
Well, so... Another required video to watch if you were a theater fan, the final night of Rock of Ages, everybody came back. Like, literally everybody came back to perform. And he had gone back.
You can catch it on Frankie Grande's final vlog, if you want.
On Broadway.com's yes. YouTube page. Also, watch the Frankie Grande vlogs, because why not? but, yeah, he came back to do the last 12 weeks before it ended to finish the run of the show, which is great. But yeah, I mean, like, his voice is crazy, especially in that Tony performance when he starts with I Wanna Rock, which is just so fun. And then obviously, Don't Stop Believing, you know, everyone does Michigan now because
that's true.
That was something that, like, no one knew before this musical. For our podcast listeners, it's me holding my finger to my palm. It's just fun. And I really love the music. I love Hit Me With Your Best Shot. Obviously, brought us the joy of Wesley Taylor singing Everybody Wants a Thrill. Like, there's just so many memories with this show.
Everybody Wants a Thrill, okay? Everybody Wants a Thrill. Everybody.
And another song that I, like, love and have been obsessed with for years from Rock of Ages is the mashup of More Than Words, Heaven. It is so good. And, I mean, people can say what they want about Julianne Hough, but I actually think that her Sherry, not bad. She was decent in that. And I did watch a Dancing with the Stars performance last night, I guess to promote the movie.
Sure. Because
I think she was judging at the time and then left because obviously she was filming. Mary J. Blige is there singing whatever they're singing.
Right.
And she's, like, going so hard. And it's really fun. It's just, like, a really fun musical. And out of all of these, it ran the longest on Broadway. It was on Broadway for 6 years.
That's very true. It did switch theaters to it started at the Brooks Atkinson and moved to a smaller theater, the Helen Hayes, a few years into its run to try and, you know, keep costs down and also making so that they didn't have to sell as many tickets. But I do think it is, like, a huge crowd pleaser. If someone was asking me for a recommendation, let's say, of these four, and they weren't a big theater person, I might, of all of these, send them to Rock of Ages before any of the others.
I agree. Know? I also think it's
at
one
least
of those
if they don't like
that...
the theater, they know the music. They'll
yes.
be at a concert, you know?
Yeah. And same thing. If you were, like, happen to be in New York, you stumble across the TKTS booth, what should we see tonight? Rock of Ages. We know it's
never
gonna be
a bad
fun
idea.
Time.
Never a bad idea. Get drunk before, as I'm sure many people do.
Yes. Including, I feel like the cast probably drinks a bit before they perform too.
You know, they got to keep their vocal health. I don't know.
I would tell someone to see that. And I also would, like, happily go and see it again.
Sure. I've never seen it, but I would see it. Again, the movie, I don't know if I'd ever make an effort to watch the full movie, but I definitely would.
See stage.
I would see it on stage. Even the Off-Broadway run that was happening recently, I think that would
Weren't
be like.
Were we there?
We might have been there. We were busy, though.
I literally think that we were, like, scrolling through what was on the Sunday night, and we were like, Rock of Ages, Moulin Rouge. Rock of Ages,
right.
It's Moulin Rouge.
It's like, well, you know, if all else fails, I guess we can head over and see Rock of Ages tonight.
Exactly. If we can't get tickets to anything, that's the one. And again, we would have, like, happily sat to see it and probably would have had a really great time.
And we would have had a drink, I feel.
Yes. A show that you might not have had a really good time at is the next musical that we're going to talk about. It was nominated for 8 Tony Awards, which was an uproar on the 2009 Broadway World boards that Shrek the Musical received 8 Tony nominations.
Oh, so, Shrek.
Steph, I know that this is like really fresh in your mind. What are your thoughts on Shrek?
Okay, so the one song from Shrek that I knew besides like Let Your Freak Flag Fly or whatever was Who I'd Be, which I think is a fantastic song. Wonderful. Janine Tesori outdid herself with that song.
It's her best work.
Okay, I wouldn't go so far as to say it's her best work, but there is something about Who I'd Be. I think the problem for me with this musical, and I watched the Netflix production, I actually like didn't finish the last 10 minutes, but whatever. I've seen the movie. I get the gist.
You got it. Yeah.
I know what happens. The problem for me with this musical is it couldn't decide like how cartoony it wanted to be. And the big comparison I have for it is SpongeBob, which is what I was saying to you earlier. And what I really liked about what SpongeBob did is that they didn't attempt to look exactly like the cartoon, that they kind of did stylized versions. And I think what's like weird for me is watching Brian D'Arcy James in full prosthetic as Shrek. And I don't know what the solution is, but I think they just made him look too much like the cartoon and it was weird.
Okay, but those prosthetics though.
Amazing prosthetics, but I don't know if they were like successful storytelling. I don't know. It was just the way they went so literal with his costume didn't work for me.
I agree with that point. I wonder if there was a conversation, much like SpongeBob, of like, do we go the full extent and give him the full horns and everything?
Right.
Or do we, I don't know what the in-between though is.
I don't know either.
It's very easy for the SpongeBob in-between to just be what it was, which was a yellow button-down with a red tie and brown shorts, because that's iconic. But to see like Brian D'Arcy James without the makeup but wearing the outfit would be even weirder for me, I think.
And it's true, because he has to be green because then Fiona has to turn green. But there's just something a little bit theme park about his
outfit. Yes, this is totally like a Universal Studios show. I mean, it's not, but it could be.
It could be. It should be. There's something very theme park about the way he looks. And I think that's what SpongeBob really shied away from, was stylizing everyone's look to make them not theme park. Because I think they could have, like, they could have easily fallen into that trap.
Yes.
But they didn't. And I think in a lot of ways, Shrek did go the theme park route.
I will say, though, I think that the costumes in general are super fun for all of the fairy tale creatures.
Beautiful. Gorgeous. Yes.
I love the Duloc people. Like, their costume, so fun. Like, latex, it's great. Well,
anytime Christopher Sieber is on stage, I'm cackling. Like, there's nothing better. I sent you a line earlier. I'm going to read it.
Yes, read it. Give us your best line reading of Lord Farquaad.
This is, like, near the end at the wedding. Where he said, when Shrek shows up at the wedding to object to stop Fiona from marrying Lord Farquaad, and he says, it's rude being alive when no one wants you, but showing up to a wedding uninvited. Why did that crack me up? Everything Lord Farquaad says.
Farquaad is such a funny character in the movie too, but obviously with Christopher Sieber and like, I'm sure he had a lot of input on that character and what he was going to do. We have not even discussed his like features. He's on his knees the entire show.
Right. Yes. This poor man, like breaking down his bones to do this show. The scene where he's in the bathtub and he's got those like little tiny legs and the giant torso.
I actually love in the, which like you can see in the Tony performance, it's the song that they sing for Duloc, which I don't think that they needed that random scene before in the Tony performance. It was like kind of strange. We didn't need it. I think.
No.
I mean, I don't know for sure, but I think that Christopher Sieber like kind of was a favorite to win that year, so they gave the song for the performance to Farquaad. I mean, like, we did get to see Shrek and Donkey and Fiona perform in the opening number, but even that performance, he's like sitting on top of the castle and he takes his tiny legs and crosses them over each other, and it's just so funny. And he ends on the like defying gravity alphabet. It's so good.
Things are looking up. Things are looking up here in Duloc.
noticed like a few different, well, early in the show, what is it? The song Story of My Life is like a straight up chorus line reference. Yes. Just like that da, da 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 at the beginning. And then, so I listened to Who I'd Be on my like iPod or my phone all the time. And the beginning, I was just on shuffle one time and I was like, what song is this? This sounds like Bring Him Home from Les Mis. And then it was Who I'd Be. It's like that first like strings, like.
Oh my God. Now I need to know. I mean, should I play back by back?
Yeah, play them back to back right here. You'll hear it. You'll hear it. It's bizarre.
I guess I'd be a hero. God on high, hear my prayer.
So there are like musical references. It's very self-referential. Like it's making fun of itself, which the movie was as well. You know, the movie was making fun of the form of fairy tales, and mm-hmm. so it makes sense that when it gets adapted to a musical, it also makes fun of the form of musicals.
Yeah, I also love, which I loved in the movie, the whole like Bachelorette number one. And I love that they played that out on stage because what a perfect moment to do that. Also, great use of projections with that magic mirror. Like, that's great. That's Gingy is great. Like, there
Gingy's so funny. I love that Gingy's like a practical effect, that it's like literally a board with, I think of that now, it would definitely be a projection. But I love that it's a practical 100%. Thing that they're doing. There's a song in Shrek that I thought was great use of ensemble, even though it was literally only three people, but Make a Move with Donkey and the Three Blind Mice as his backup singers. I'm like, this is it. This is the best use of the ensemble here right now. Like, this is peak Shrek. We haven't even talked about Donkey's outfit. Daniel Breaker doing a fantastic performance as Donkey, but whatever suit they've got him in, no. I object. It makes me feel the same way Idris Elba in Cats made me feel.
Oh my God. It is actually
disgusted.
Interesting. Not that like Shrek is obviously a DreamWorks property and Frozen is Disney, but I think about like the evolution of the puppets, right? And obviously Donkey was literally wearing like a Party City Halloween costume. And then you think of like Sven, that's this like incredible puppet. They also probably could have done something like they did for Olaf with Donkey. So it wasn't so literal.
Yes, Donkey. That's the biggest problem. Everything in Shrek is so literal. Not everything, but like the main characters specifically, like Donkey and Shrek, look very little. Whereas when you talk about like Sven and Olaf, they're these kind of like artsy representations, which I think translates the cartoon better than just like slapping the green.
Which it is kind of interesting though, because as we were saying, like Gingy is a good example of that, right? Mm-hmm. It's not like a person in a gingerbread costume.
No, I love the puppet of Gingy. I think it's great. Pinocchio, John
I love that.
Amazing. The nose trick, so good, so good.
Yeah, and the dragon is a really cool puppet. It's huge. I mean, the Broadway theater, massive theater, as we know, so they had a lot of room to play with their set, which I do think, like, his swamp is really cool. The castle stuff, super cool. I Know It's Today. I have loved that song for so many years.
Now I know he'll appear, 'cause there are rules and there are strictures. I believe the storybooks I read by candlelight. My white knight, my knight and his steed will look just like these pictures. It won't be long now, I guarantee.
It's the three Fionas. They're just singing about their life in the tower. She comes out in the tower. And, like, let's give it up for Sutton Foster because she is, as we know, incredible. But that song, so fun. And then also her Act 2 opener.
The tap number.
Morning Person?
Yes, it's Morning Person? Yeah, it's called Morning Person. You're right. It's called Morning Person. That has, like, very Fosse energy to me at certain points. I think she does a great job. There's sometimes I was like, is Sutton Foster miscast in this? I don't know, but I
think
also,
she is too talented for Fiona, but like maybe wanted to do something fun. I do think that many people could step into that role and kill it.
Well, it's hard because, you know, obviously with the tapping, there's so much of her that they brought And yes. The moment where I saw the most, like, Sutton was right before Shrek comes to her tower. She's, like, cleaning up the room to try and get ready to, like, lie on her thing. And yeah. I feel like that was a Sutton ad-lib that cracked everyone up in the rehearsal room that now she does every night. Like, it felt very her as we've gotten to watch her in lots of things in the past, like, 10, 15 years now. You know, as younger fans, we're intimately, we know her acting style. So I was like, oh, I see her in that.
Liza and Younger would for sure audition for Fiona and Shrek.
You're right. You know, there's similarities. They both lie about something very important about them, about themselves.
That's true. Yeah.
To try and get ahead.
Something that you were saying just before we got on here is the Fiona transformation to the ogre happens so fast. And it's like, crazy. Guys, how did you do that?
I'm like, did they just like slap a mask on her, like a Party City mask? Because it doesn't look like that. It looks good.
No, it does look really good. I mean, for the Netflix production, I'm sure they stopped down to make sure that the makeup actually looked phenomenal. But I'm sure on stage it looked great too.
Yeah. They, like, she has a minute or like maybe more to get into it the first time during Who I'd Be, or maybe like the beginning 2 or 3 minutes of that song to get into it. But then the next time we see it, she's kind of behind a screen talking to Donkey. So I wonder if it's like not super precise that time. But then the last time, the final time she transforms into it at the wedding, I feel like it's really quick.
We need to go back to Who I'd Be for a second, because I really think that the I Know It's Today callback is such a fantastic
part. We haven't even talked about my favorite part of Who I'd Be, but go on, yes.
It's just like Fiona comes in and sings the like an ogre always whatever part, and then it's like, I can't. I love that song so much.
Okay, my favorite part of it is the Brian D'Arcy James peak acting moment, which is when he says, and I put down my helmet. Like, like, why are you acting? Like, you're in a green plastic mask. Why are you acting so hard? Why are you nailing this?
I kick the girl, I take a breath, and I remove my helmet. We stand and stare, we speak of love.
We also just like need to give a moment to Brian D'Arcy James's voice, which was something that we had talked about on our Smash episode of like why cast him in this musical show and not use his voice. If you want to hear his voice and you've never heard of him before, go watch Shrek on Netflix. He is so good. He is so good, specifically in this song. I also love, again, in Who I'd Be, when he sings that like big, bright, beautiful world moment. It's so powerful and like cathartic. He's amazing. But I think the most interesting part about this year in general is that Brian D'Arcy James was in the off-Broadway production of Next to Normal as Dan. And I'm assuming that he left that to go do Shrek.
I you know, it's funny. You work on so many different things, I'm sure, at so many different times. So for two of the big projects in your life to coincide and go to Broadway at the exact same time probably rarely happens. And it has happened to Brian D'Arcy James twice. And
and he hasn't been on Broadway since.
Well, the first time was this with choosing between Next to Normal and Shrek, and he chose to do Shrek, obviously. And the second time was choosing between Something Rotten and Hamilton, and he chose Something Rotten. And it's... I don't know. I don't know what is the right choice. Like, obviously, who else could be Shrek but BDJ?
But I know. I actually don't think anyone else could.
Like, who else could be Shrek
but the eyebrows are already there.
Those are all natural, okay? Who could be him but BDJ? But it's such a, like, the decisions that you have to make as an actor for those moments, it's very interesting. And for him to have to do it twice, crazy.
I do think that he would have been nominated for both roles because he was nominated for Shrek. And
J. Robert Spencer was nominated for Next to Normal as Dan. So also, it's a great part. Both of those are great parts.
very, very different.
Imagine.
I mean, are we parts.
Are we talking about Next to Normal? I brought props for that, too.
Yeah, let's get into it.
Welcome.
No, but I do just want to say, like, in general with Next to Normal, if you, we don't love to promote bootlegs on this, but, like, the Brian D'Arcy James bootleg of Next to Normal, which was, like, so many years ago, is fantastic, especially the final, like, the reprise of...
The I Am the One reprise.
Yes. Him and Aaron debate together is something to see. But something interesting with Next to Normal that I found, again, me going back to do research on the 2009 Broadway World boards, is that in January, there was a thread that was created about, like, who, you know, like, our way too early Tony nominations. And Next to Normal hadn't transferred yet. So it wasn't even in the running. 9 to 5 was crazy. Like, it was 9 to 5, Shrek, and Rock of Ages. Those were the three new musicals that people were saying were going to be nominated. Maybe
not
title
Billy?
Show. Oh, sorry. Billy? And Billy. But it was like 9 to 5 was the fourth spot. There was no other musical that was going to take it. And Next to Normal was off Broadway. Then it went to Arena Stage, which happened to be in Virginia that year.
So smart. They recognized that they needed more time. You know,
yeah.
A lot of shows would rush the transfer, but Next to Normal had such a long development process, and they were like, "We're not going to rush it until it's ready."
But then at this point, it's like January 2009, and the show has not even announced that they're transferring, and the Tony Awards are in June. And then it started previews end of March. It opened in April, which I assume was like right before that Tony cutoff.
Yeah.
And then literally became like
huge.
It was the second most nominated show that season. Like, crazy. Nominated for 11 Tony Awards. Obviously won a Pulitzer Prize in 2010. Like, it is
Without being nominated for the Pulitzer Prize.
I know.
A write-in winner. Crazy.
And also, like, Tom Kidd and Brian Yorkey. Like, what a fantastic score that they created for this show. It's like, this show, again, we had talked about it extensively with Brandon Antonio on that episode that we did.
Almost
we
2 years
in Toronto.
Ago now.
Crazy. I love that production. I thought it was really good.
Me too.
You got to see the one and only Alice Ripley.
I did. This one. I did. I saw her on the first national tour of Next to Normal and in the final night in Toronto, which was the last leg of the tour. So I believe it was her final performance ever doing Diana as Alice.
Wow.
It was a crazy night, honestly.
And I know that this show is, like, one of your favorites of all time.
You're right. If you want my full thoughts on Next to Normal, you should head over to the original cast with Patrick Flynn and listen to my episode from last summer where, like, we really got into it because, you know, I said, this was kind of a formative time for me in, like, really falling in love with musicals. And Next to Normal was one of the first ones that I really loved, like, deeply, deeply loved and was obsessed with. Mm-hmm. And... I mean, it's funny. There are four shows that we're talking about here, and two of them I'm like, meh, and two of them I have, like, such a deep connection to.
Yeah. No, it's true. I also think that that Tony performance is amazing.
Yeah.
It is, like, if you have...
It sells the show.
Yeah, if you had not heard anything of the show, and you see this performance, although, like, tragically there was still sound issues during that performance, but, like... It really shows you who the character of Diana is and, like, really also tells you why Alice Ripley won the Tony Award that
yes.
year. Like, she is killing it. And I, like, Aaron Tveit comes in and there's something about the way, specifically in this performance, when he does, like, the callback lines to Dan, that, like, he's sinister looking but still so cute that you're like, wow, this casting, great.
He's such good casting.
And also, like, why weren't you nominated for this?
It is interesting because I think he has such a difficult job during that show to play this character who is really an extension of another character.
Yeah.
Did he make it look too easy? Did he just look too cute doing it? What was
Probably.
The problem?
Well, but interesting also is that, like, Jen Damiano was nominated, yet she's nowhere to be found in this Tony telecast.
It is interesting. Like, that's true. We don't even see her. I mean,
no.
She was amazing. I think she was, like, 17 years old playing Natalie, which was, you know, fun for me as a viewer because I was around that same age as her when she was in the show and, like, at the same age as the character. So that was kind of, like, really thrilling as an audience member to get to see. But yeah, she's not in that performance. I don't know what they would have done.
No, I think like you can't really do the opening. You also can't really do the closing because it gives away too much. I think it's the correct song choice to show off the show.
But there's just no Natalie because Natalie stormed off at this point.
The only thing that I could have thought is that they might have been able to like write in a teeny tiny bit of Superboy and the Invisible Girl just to get her there.
But it doesn't really make sense. It just gets too much. It becomes too muddled. Like, I like the idea that they let those two songs breathe. Like, you don't know into I Am the One. And you get to see that full, like, sequence.
Yeah.
And it's like you're in that moment of the show and you understand the relationships of these characters, even though you don't quite know what's going on, because it doesn't tell you that he's dead.
When you say let go, and I say you don't know.
Exactly. And it's still like kind of the same staging, like Aaron is on the stairs, like jumps down. So it does give you a sense of like what the actual staging of the show is. I will also say, if you want to watch an amazing interview with the cast of Next to Normal, go and watch the Stars in the House reunion. It's fantastic hearing about all of their like behind the scenes, how much the show changed between off-Broadway and on-Broadway, and like literally just how much the show meant to all of them as people during that time. Bring tissues. It's a sad one, but it's also amazing. Yeah, I mean, like, this is such an amazing score. And I really think, again, I've said this on like many, many episodes. We want to dive in and talk about Tom Kitt at one point. But like, this is some of his best work. And that sequence that we talked about, what is it? I think it starts with like, you don't know, all the way into Make Up Your Mind, Catch Me, I'm Falling, is just right. Like, what an incredible five songs there.
One song right after another, just bigger and bigger and bigger. And like the way Brian Yorkie's lyrics like layer over each other. I always talk about Make Up Your Mind, Catch Me, I'm Falling, the way that they manage to thread like three or four narratives together and have them crash in that moment to represent to the audience like the emotional turmoil that Diana is being put through and Dan has been put through and Natalie is put through. It's like masterful work.
The visions are just your defense. Make up your mind.
That's also the Jen Damiano shines there in the...
She's not there!
Yes, exactly. It's just, if you have not listened to the entire score, like, even if you have not seen it, go listen to it. You'll get the gist of the show. It's really great. And it's one that, like, you can go back to all the time.
I also like to, if you're ever in the mood to cry, start from the break, right at the end of the show, to the finale, just like the last, I think it's six songs, the break, Make Up Your Mind, Catch Me, I'm Falling, Reprise, Maybe, Next to Normal, Hey Number Three, So Anyway, I Am the One, Reprise, into like Light. That's emotions right there.
I think I said on our Next Normal episode that I love I Am the One. I really love that song. I Am the One, Reprise, though, the Gabe Gabriel moment at the end, mm-hmm. I can't.
No. It's too much.
It's too much. And for that reason, we are moving on to our final show that was nominated. And obviously, it won our Best Musical in 2009. And that is Billy Elliot. We did talk about this kind of recently because we saw Billy Elliot at Stratford.
It was a year and a half ago, Tara. Do you remember that?
Crazy. But what a phenomenal production.
That was a really fantastic, fantastic production. I agree. Stratford knows how to do it.
It's a great show. It's a great cast recording, I think. And I don't know. I was listening again. I was listening to the Ensemblist episode, and they were talking about the actual Tony performance that they did, other than Electricity at the beginning, was Angry Dance, and yeah. They didn't like that as a choice to show off the show. And I was like, I love this as the choice for the show.
I really like Angry Dance. I think it's interesting because there's no real singing in that song. It's just like grunting until like Solidarity comes back in at the end, but. I understand not liking that song as a performance because there's no singing. You don't have the context for why he's angry. Like you don't understand what's going on besides he's just like upset. And it's also like the only tap number in the show. So you don't get to see like the ballet that the show is famous for. But I also love it so much. So I can't be mad at it.
Yeah, I really love that whole song, that whole scene. That was one that when I originally saw Billy Elliot in Toronto, however many years ago, that was the one song that I remembered. Specifically the moment when like Billy climbs on the police officer's shield.
And he's like jumping off. Such a great use of prop. Like the choreography is, I think the choreography in Billy Elliot, who is choreographer? I definitely know this. Oh, so choreographed by Peter Darling, who also did the original film. There's like a visual language in the musical that I think stays on from the movie. Mm-hmm. I think the way that they use the adult men who play like the minors and the police officers.
Yeah.
Like in the dances to contrast with the dancers is like such great storytelling. The way that a lot of it is told through movement, which is great because it's a dance show, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, there aren't that many dance shows, right? So I think, again, speaking on that performance, like bringing in the different aspects of dance, especially because the opening number featured Electricity, which is more obviously ballet.
Sure.
It really showed you the range of the show, I feel.
Yeah, I agree. And also the opening number featuring Electricity, which is kind of like the one that you want Elton John to come and sing.
Yeah.
Elton John.
But Elton does deliver the line right before Billy starts in Angry Dance. There's like a specific line that I can't remember if it's Billy's dad that says it. I think it might be about like not going to ballet school or like not even auditioning for it. And that's when it's like... hit the stage, he like grunts for the first time and we get into it and the audience like really cheers. Mm-hmm. I was thinking about is that the three Billies were nominated, yet only one of them did this performance.
Right. So from what I understand, the one who did it was, who am I looking at? Trent Kowalik, and he was the best tap dancer of the three of them. So they chose him to do Angry Dance, but the three of them got to perform at the beginning. I saw David Alvarez, as has been mentioned before on the podcast, star of the West Side Story. West Side Story. I think it was right as they were leaving, so we might have like in his like last month or a few weeks of performances. Honestly, fantastic. I'd have been happy to see any of them.
Well, also I think about this, and I think about Fun Home and Sydney Lucas also getting that huge moment at those Tony Awards, and same as here. Like these kids are so young, and they've got like the best of the best. Liza Minnelli is sitting front row. Like that's crazy and so exciting.
Yes, I always think when I think of Billie Eilish, I think of a few songs, but the number one song I always think of is Solidarity. Like talking before about the way that they use this like 10-minute song to show the passage of time, to show Billie learning ballet, but also to show the progression of the miners' strike. And they're able to communicate so much with like very few scenes. It's all through visuals and movement and song. And I think that's its biggest strength.
Solidarity, solidarity, solidarity forever. All for one and one for all. Solidarity forever. Solidarity, solidarity, solidarity forever. All for one and one for all. Solidarity forever.
And I love that this musical feels like it's dancey, but it doesn't feel clean or sharp. It feels like dirty and like grungy. Yeah.
It's... And I also think, like, again, we saw it in 2019, but I do think that it's kind of a show and a property that, like, is timeless and could be revived at any time, could come back. If they were going to redo a movie musical, they could do Billy Elliot.
Add the music? Yeah, I'd be interested. I would be interested to see it. I was thinking about the original music, the original movie, earlier today, because for some reason I was rereading Harry Potter. And obviously Julie Walters, who plays Mrs. Weasley in the Harry Potter movies, plays the dance teacher in these movies.
That's great casting.
It's such good casting. She's so good. and I just like love her in that part. I love that part. Another great song is Shine at the beginning. Just Billy like being a deer in headlights in this ballet class that's happening all around him. I also feel very attached to this musical, one because it was the first thing I ever saw on Broadway, but also because like I have spent a few years as a community center dance teacher, so there's like something very relatable in it. I was also chain smoking in the corner, just like Mrs. Wilkinson.
Of course.
If my boss ever hears this, I was not. I did not do that. I obviously did not do that.
I also love that song. Is it Express Yourself? Is that what it's called?
With Michael, where they're like,
yes,
the giant dresses come out and dance. Yes, the headless dresses.
I just think that in general, like, this is an important show for kids to see, for anyone to see, because it really shows you that dance is universal and it does not matter who you are, what you are, whatever. Like, if you love something, go for it. And that's all there is to it. So I do think that at the end of the day, like, the message of the show is really great.
It's one that is, like, so close to my heart. Like, Next Normal and Billy Elliot are two shows that I'm, like, so deeply attached to.
According, again, to the 2009 Broadway World Boards, this year was kind of an upset in terms of nominations. I don't think a lot of people loved Billy Elliot, or maybe they just didn't love that it was being marketed as an Elton John musical, which, like, I get it. But
like, he was like the star, like,
yes,
right.
But there was a lot of people upset about the fact that none of the women from 9 to 5 were nominated. And yeah, like Stephanie J. Block singing Get Out and Stay Out.
Get Out and Stay Out. It is very, very interesting. Well, actually, Allison Janney was nominated. I do think it's interesting that you have these three women at the center of this musical at a female-led team with Dolly Parton at the head there writing this original music that she was nominated for, but for it kind of to be left behind is interesting. And I don't know what it would replace. I mean, I think people would say maybe Shrek.
Well, I think the uproar was that Sutton was nominated and Megan and Stephanie weren't, but I do think that Sutton gives a really good performance. So I don't know. Maybe like someone from Pal Joey could have been pushed aside there.
Well, the nominations for lead, were they all in lead, all three of them?
Because I don't know. I was so really difficult. Trying to find the eligibility for 2009. And if someone finds it, send it our way, because I could not find it.
It's difficult. It's difficult because, yeah, the lead category was Alice Ripley, who was going to win. Stalker Channing and Pal Joey, Sutton Foster and Shrek the Musical, Allison Janney in 9 to 5, and Josefina Scaglione in West Side Story. So, okay. And then featured Karen Olivo, Jane Damiano, Hayden Gwynn from Billy Elliot, who played Mrs. Wilkinson, Martha Plimpton from Pal Joey, and Carol Shelley from Billy Elliot. So we got a double Billy Elliot.
I think it might have been, I think the uproar was over the double Billy Elliot nominations.
The grandma, though.
I know.
She's so emotional. Such an emotional scene.
I think the biggest critique of that year was that, again, it was being branded as an Elton John musical, and that really upset people. And maybe that's the reason that, like, some people didn't see it. I don't know. But, like, guys, you're missing out if you haven't seen Billy Elliot.
It's so fantastic. This is, for any non-Canadian viewers, if anyone recalls that a viral picture from a couple years ago of the dogs in the audience watching a show. They were watching Billy Elliot at Stratford, a production that we saw. And if the service dogs can sit through this production.
You say that as if that's a bad thing to sit
through. It's not a bad thing. If it could keep the service dogs' attention, then you know it's great.
Yes. Okay, so we know your feelings on Billy Elliot and Next Normal. And I mean, now the other two as well. But do you think that this was the correct Best Musical winner?
Oh, this is so difficult. I love Billy Elliot as a musical. I think it's a fantastic musical. If I were to pick my winner for that year, I don't begrudge Billy Elliot, but I would probably go Next to Normal. And I think what would give it the edge for me is that it's a completely original musical versus being an adaptation.
I 100% agree.
You know, we have Billy Elliot and we have Shrek both being original scores, but adaptations of well-known, well-loved movies. And we have Rock of Ages, which is an original story, but...
The music.
Known music. Whereas Next to Normal was completely original music, completely original storyline, completely original book, developed over years and years and years to put this together. It feels the least like it was put together in a factory, and not that these other shows do. Like, I really don't feel like Billy Elliot feels like it was like mass produced in any way. I feel like I love that show, but there's something special, and there always will be something very special about something that's wholly original and that feels completely new.
And then on top of that, you have these like crazy incredible performances from everybody in that cast. So I do agree, like, as a whole, I do think the Next to Normal property is the one.
I love what they're able to do with six actors on a stage.
Yeah.
Like you know, for me, it's between Billy Elliot and Next to Normal, obviously. But, like, Billy Elliot has a huge ensemble. And it feels big. But Next to Normal also feels big, you know?
Yeah.
With six people on stage.
Also, I think I said that Billy Elliot was nominated for 11. It was actually nominated for 15, which at the time was, I believe, a record for nominations. And it won 10 Tony Awards. So, yeah, I mean, I agree that I don't think Shrek and Rock of Ages were in play. But in general, what you were just saying, like, Shrek is also a huge cast. Like, there's so many people in that cast. We should have done Shrek when we worked at camp. There's so many characters.
You're right. There's so many characters. It's a good one because, you know, there's always like two lines for the 7-year-olds who can't read or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. There's three pigs. There's three mice. There's like triples and doubles of every character.
So everyone's got a name. Character can feel like they're involved. You're right. We should write to whoever running the.
And it would have been such a great opportunity for like everyone to make their own costumes. It would have been fantastic. Mm. We really missed the ball on that.
Drop the ball on Shrek.
Yeah.
The finale to I'm a Believer. Oh, I'm just thinking about the choreography I could have done.
That would have been our camp dance also.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Wow. But it's very hard to sing. And I don't know that I would have been able to teach that.
Who would be Shrek? Would we paint someone green?
Of course we would.
Of course we would. We did paint people green for Elphaba. We did paint people green when they
And you know Elphaba. That Shara would have made little Shrek ears for everybody for your dances.
For the finale. Yes. Wow. I have one of the finales wearing Shrek ears.
You know what, guys? One more summer. Let's go.
We're going back to camp so we can do Shrek.
Okay, I think that wraps up our thoughts on the 2009 Tony Awards. Let us know who you would have liked to see win Best Musical that year if it was not Billy Elliot. We would love to hear. And with that being said, it is now time for our Obsession of the Week.
Not too long ago on Twitter, there was a video making the rounds that I had never seen before. And it's honestly a travesty that I'd never seen this video before. And it is Julia Murney rehearsing for the Actors Fund concert of Chess, singing Nobody's Side. And it is very specifically the rehearsal video. Do not watch the performance video. It's fine, but it's nothing compared to the rehearsal video.
Was this like 2 months ago? A month ago? Whenever Maybe. It was, you had sent it to me being like, in all caps, have you seen this? Like, you need to watch this.
I'm literally obsessed with it. I was like studying for something and I would just watch this video on repeat in the background. Okay, so Julia Murney's wearing like this like blue denim tank top and these like white capris. And she's got obviously her lanyard. A great moment also is at the beginning of the video. It's Adam Pascal, who's just in like a hoodie and also his lanyard, just exiting the scene right at the beginning.
The lanyard really sets the scene. It's really great.
It's perfect. It's so perfect. Julia Murney has such an amazing voice. We saw her perform a few years ago, maybe like 2015, doing Broadway Love Stephen Schwartz, because she's a former Elphaba. And she sang Defying Gravity that night. Her voice is amazing. There, I definitely have a picture with her somewhere. I will find it.
I also feel like randomly, because that same year that we saw that Stephen Schwartz, I was in New York and saw Jeremy Jordan at 54 Below, which I'm pretty sure I told him that I was going to see it when we were there. And Julia Murney was at the bar. So it was really? Just like full circle. Yeah,
that is random. Crazy. That was crazy. Yeah, because Jeremy Jordan was also at the concert. Yes. So anyway, Julia Murney has the craziest voice, and her singing Nobody's Side is perfect. There's just so many amazing vocal choices that she makes.
The one choices. That I always,
choices, like full on, like choices with a capital C, capital H, capital O, I, C, E, S. Okay? All capitals. Okay. The one that I always think of is like, never let a friend fool you twice. Like, it's so good. Of every note, the way she screams, it's so good. It's just like chills, like full body chills every time you watch this video, which I do like daily.
We literally watched it together right before we started recording, and I said, and I will repeat, Julia Murney never marked a day in her life.
No, like every time she just goes and nails it. There's also a crazy video, I think it was also an Actors Fund, I'm not sure. They did a concert of Funny Girl. Yes, Funny Girl. And she sang People. Mm-hmm. And Seth Rudetsky tells this story a lot where nobody really knew who Julia Murney was. And everyone in the audience is like, who's this singing People? Like the most iconic song of the show. And then at the end of the song, she nailed it so hard that the audience had lost their minds for her. And if you ever want to watch that on YouTube, also great. Peter Gallagher is there too, so if you want,
I will put it in the description. Some of that.
But Obsession, Nobody's Side, Julia Murney, rehearsal footage only.
I think after we saw that Stephen Schwartz at Roy Thomson Hall, we were like, guys, we're sleeping on Julia Murney's voice here. Like, what are we doing?
Like, let's talk about Wild Party, okay?
She's amazing, and she's underrated, and not, like, she doesn't get enough recognition, the recognition that she deserves. And
let's raise
Thank
the
you,
roof.
Twitter, for giving that
Let's
to
make
us.
A scene.
I also feel okay. like it's made its way onto TikTok, which, like, is great, because then yes. more exposure will happen.
Exactly. Okay, Tara, yeah. What is your obsession of the week?
Okay, so I have many obsessions this time, which is, like, so rare for me. I'm normally, like, scraping to find obsessions. This amazing song, which is from R&H Goes Pop, which this album recently came out, but the song I think was released in 2019. We've talked about other ones, the 10 minutes ago / in the next 10 minutes, Jeremy yeah. Jordan's take on Oh What a Beautiful Morning. This is Matt Doyle and Jelani Aladdin singing We Kiss in a Shadow from The King and I. And oh my God, these voices together, one, their voices, two, the harmonies, three, like the riffs, it's insane. It is like buttery and smooth and perfect and amazing, and I love it so much. I actually think the entire R&H Goes Pop album is really good, and the way that they've changed these like classic songs, but this song In the King and I, it like this is now sort of in, it's in the perspective of like two gay men singing the song, but also in a mixed race relationship. And it just like brings a different perspective to lyrics that were written so many years ago, mm-hmm. and brings them into
them.
Yeah, it brings mm-hmm. it into a new light, and it makes it more universal for people. They actually did, I think Laura Osnes was doing at the very beginning of the pandemic, like check-ins with everybody that was doing R&H Goes Pop, and right. they actually did a video together for Pride that it was released in June, and they sang it together, and they were just like gushing about how much they loved each other's voices. And yeah, like Matt Doyle was saying, that these lyrics are really universal, and to hear it come out in 2021 or 2020 or whenever it is, somebody can put themselves into that character and feel those emotions.
Yeah, there are now like different reasons why you'd have to have a forbidden relationship, not just one of them belongs to a emperor or whatever.
Yes, exactly. But also it made me think about that, like, we have seen, like, different performances of Matt Doyle over the years at, like, live 54 Below performances, but he's one of those people that constantly replaces, so he's not yes. on cast recordings. And as great as those live performances are, there's something about, like, a mixed version of a song that's, like, such great yeah. quality. It's just so nice to hear. Even Jelani, like, obviously he's on the Frozen cast recording, but he's not on many, so to hear them in this, like, really nicely professionally mixed yeah. song is beautiful.
To kiss in the sunlight and say to the sky, behold and believe what you see.
Hercules cast recording with Jelani.
We okay. need it. We need it. So yeah, We Kiss in a Shadow from Arnish Goes Pop. Again, the whole album, really good. But this song, you just like want to listen to it over and over again because like the smooth styling of Matt Doyle and Jelani Ladin is chef's
kiss. I love this trend of taking theater songs and then kind of making like pop modern albums out of this. Like I've talked about my Stephen Sondheim
yeah.
losing my mind, A Musical Fever Dream. Like it's kind of in that same vein of taking these songs that are from a very specific context and then kind of pulling them out of that context and making them modern. I think it's a really, really fun trend.
And much like Sondheim, these obviously Rodgers and Hammerstein Property are songs that like everyone's heard at one point in their life. So to hear it in a different light, whether it's lyrics, well, the lyrics are all the same, but whether it's like fully transformation of a song, which I think like the Oh What a Beautiful Morning is a full transformation of
yeah,
that song.
It sounds so
whereas
different.
This one doesn't sound like it's still the same melody.
What makes it different is that it's two men singing it versus
yeah.
I can't remember.
So it's cool. And also for anyone that's interested in this album, there are music videos for like many of these songs on the R&H Ghost Pop channel. So you can check those out as well. They're really cool. Yeah, that wraps up our obsessions and also this episode. But before we go, we are bringing back our charity spotlight and we are highlighting the Sporting Life 10K. This is not a theater-related charity, but it is related to our podcast because Shara is actually running the 10K, which, Steph, you and I would never be able to run
no,
a 10K.
No, no. Shara was like, let's do a marathon. And I'm like, great, what movies?
And actually, we were supposed to go to Disneyland Paris because Shara was going to run the marathon. And Steph and right. I were like, see you at the finish line.
Yeah, it's like, you can wake up and go and we'll meet you there at a normal time, okay?
Yes. But in all seriousness, Shara has done such amazing work with Camp Ooch over the years. And this month, May, is the Sporting Life 10K in support of the Camp for, which is Camp for Kids with Cancer. Steph, I know that you got to do a little bit of work with Camp Ooch.
I did. Shara brought me in. They've done a program where they put on a musical with some of the Camp Ooch kids, and they put on an original musical that they used modern songs, and they wrote the script themselves, and I went in and choreographed. And to work with the kids and just honestly have a blast with them was, like, it's some of the most rewarding stuff. Like, we've talked about working at camp, and just working with kids and fostering a love of theater in them is amazing. And they, to get the funding to do that, they rely on fundraisers like this, mm-hmm. like this 10K run and many others, to be able to provide these services for the kids.
And obviously, like everything else this year, everything has had to go virtual for Camp Ooch. So this event is, again, everyone is doing this across May. It's supporting families in Toronto and all over Ontario. And if you want to learn more about it, you can head to ooch.org or head to our social media. Also, if you are looking to host your own podcast, we use Podbean. It's super easy, super convenient. And if you head to www.podbean.com/off2bway with the number 2, you can get a month free.
And if you want to follow our podcast, you can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at off2bway podcast. That's with the number 2.
And you can subscribe to our podcast wherever you listen to podcasts, as well as subscribe to us here on YouTube. And we will see you guys next time.
Bye.